we're beginning at Sagaskvul. So just want to give some background on Sagaskvul, talk about what we can expect to see, what we can expect to focus on, and describe the overall limud. We previously did Baal Talon. Sagaskvul is going to be very different from Baal Talon. It's longer and more difficult. It's also more classically Chazon Mishpat. You know, we discussed initially what Chazon Mishpat is, as I understand it. Baal Talon, as we noticed, isn't really about litigation. There are two sides. The issue is concern for the worker's zchuyas and concern for his for giving him what he's due. But you know, the tshuvas, you don't go to Beis Din for Baal Talon. You have to pay. If you don't pay at all, then you end up in Beis Din. But the point is, Baal Talon is largely a question of mitzvah. Most of the tshuvas are just, as you find in Archaim Yardea, what I should do, what I shouldn't do. Sagaskvul is very different. Sagaskvul is indeed litigated quite heavily. In America, I think I can say it's probably one of the most common causes, one of the fairly common causes of Dinei Torah, probably in Eretz Yisrael too to some extent. Sagaskvul is something that historically has been litigated. There are many tshuvas, many Dinei Torah on it. There's an extremely robust literature on the topic. We'll have to see how much we get a chance to see. But Sagaskvul is very much classic Chazon Mishpat, in which people often battled about it and often ended up in, you know, contentious Dinei Torah. There was one here in Silver Spring, I understand, shortly before I came. But Sagaskvul is going to be very typical in some ways of Chazon Mishpat. Just to describe some of the key issues, some of the key questions we're going to see. First of all, even to begin with the name. We've seen the Gemara today. The Gemara does not actually use the term Sagaskvul. The Gemara doesn't really use any term. The Gemara just discusses the question of whether you're allowed to open stores. The one phrase the Gemara uses several times is kapaskis l'chiyusai, posik l'chiyusi, which literally means infringing or stopping, blocking my livelihood. There is no really good name for the topic that we're doing. Another phrase we'll see commonly is called yored l'omnus. It's an idiomatic expression, difficult to translate literally. Literally, to descend into my business. Yared implies to forestall, to cut off, to interfere with my business. The term Sagaskvul is a very interesting one. Colloquially, that's often how it's referred to. Perhaps that's the most famous, the most widely used in the vernacular description for what we're talking about. Very unclear where that term comes from. There is a lav in the Torah, lo sasigvul reacha, but that lav has nothing to do with what we call Sagaskvul. That lav has to do with tampering with the boundaries of real estate, and moving around boundaries. It's talking about Karka and Eretz Yisrael. If you look in the Encyclopedia Talmudis entry for Sagaskvul, they first list the Isser Daraisa, then they list certain other things Chazal included. Finally, at the end of several pages, they tell you, if you want to know about Sagaskvul in the sense of unfair competition, you'll look at what we wrote on Yared L'Omnus, I think. So it's not really unclear where this comes from, Sagaskvul. It is a pretty old usage. There are tshuvas in the Rishonim who do use the term. I'm quite fascinated by the question of who started this and who was the first. I don't believe there's any Chazal, maybe one Medrash or something, but I don't believe there's any real discussion of Chazal that use the term this way. But again, so call it what we want. Call it Yared L'Omnus, call it Pasik L'Chiyusei, call it Sagaskvul. What exactly is the Isser? We'll see in the Gemara what is Isser, what's Mutter, how do we paskin. The details are all going to be in the sugya that we're learning now, but what is the source of the Isser? Is it Daraisa? Is it Drabanan? Is it learned from Sukkim? So there are really two Gemaras, neither of which gets into any halachic question of what's Mutter and what's Isser, but there are two Gemaras that refer to Yared L'Omnus. One of them is in Sanhedrin, Daf Pei Aleph. The Gemara there says, El haharim lo achal, a pasuk in Yecheskel. So it explains what that means. Ve'enav lo nasel glule beis Yisrael, explains what that means. And a third thing, the pasuk is listing good things or bad things that people avoided doing. Tzaddikim, people who did the right thing, were not nichshel in these various averis. One of the things is, that's eishes re'eu lo timei, he has not defiled his friend's wife. So the Gemara says it doesn't mean literally what it sounds like. It means shlo yarad lo'omnus chaver. He didn't interfere with his friend's livelihood. Similarly, in the end of Makkos, there's a famous sugya. The Gemara starts with the idea that there are tariq mitzvahs. We all grew up with that from grade school, but the one real makar is one very brief Gemara in Makkos that says that there are tariq mitzvahs that were given to Moshe at Sinai. And then the Gemara proceeds to list a bunch of summaries. It says someone said there were 11, someone said there were 6, and 3, and 1. The Gemara proceeds to distill down the Tariq Mitzvahs into a number of shorter, a number of a number of more concentrated klalim, I guess. First we have Sheish Meres Shalosh Esrei Mitzvahs Nemru. Then we have Bud David of Midin El Achas Esrei. David said 11. So David's 11, which is based on a chapter in Tehillim, and says Mizmor Le David Hashem Mi Yoger Ba Alecha Mi Yishkan Bahar Kodeshecha. It's one of the things. Holech Tamim Poel Tzedek Dover Emes Bilvavo La Rogel Al Lashono La Asla Re'eu Ra. So La Asla Re'eu Ra is number 5. So each one, again, the Gemara says what these phrases in the Pesukim refer to. Lo Asla Re'eu Ra, the Gemara says, the last daf in Makkos is Shlo Yard L'Umnes Chavero. So again, a person was not Yared L'Umnes Chavero, he didn't encroach on the livelihood of his fellow man. So these two Gemaras both indicate that Yared L'Umnes is bad. Again, these are not halachic Gemaras, these are Agadot Gemaras. The goal of these Gemaras is not to get into the parameters and the details. Both these Gemaras make it clear that Yared L'Umnes is a bad thing. There is indeed a tshuva in the Kedushim of the Marit. In Kedushin, that's another sigla which we may get to as part two of this limud, but in the Kedushin Marit, he says, Chazal say that people who do certain things related to Yared L'Umnes are considered Rishayim. The specific case is called Anim HaPek B'Charara, that's something we'll get to later, but it's a kind of cousin, a cousin prohibition to Yared L'Umnes. So Marit actually asks this question. He says, what is the source for this thing that you're called a Rasha? To be called a Rasha, you have to do some kind of Avera. So what is the... And not only that, but he suggested, it seems biblical. He says, anything that you do, anything that Chazal told you not to do, you're a Rasha. The Gemara says, if you don't listen to Chazal, you're a Rasha. But what's the source? The Gemara implies there's something specific about this, a specific prohibition derived from the Torah that someone violates. So he says, the Makar is indeed this Gemara. The Gemara says that, I forget whether he brings the Gemara in Sanhedrin or the Gemara in Makkos, but he says, these Psukim refer to Yared L'Umnes. And it says, he refers to the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says these three things: if you are elaharam lo achal, einav lo nase al gulei beis Yisrael, and eishes rei lo time, which means shelo yared l'umnos. And then the pesukim go on and they say, after that the pasuk says tzadiku chayo yichya, and the Marit brings it. It says tzidkas tzadik tia will stand for him, and rishas harasha will get him in trouble. The Marit says, you see from these psukim that someone who indeed was Yared L'Umnes Chavero was called a Rasha. Various Achronim point out that certainly the Gemara in Makkos, putting aside the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Makkos is listing people who do good things, the Chavas Yar, the Chum Sofer. Various Achronim say that Gemara in Makkos seems to be listing Midas Chasidus. If you look at the other things the Gemara says in Makkos, they're not necessarily all things that are mandatory. They're Milas, they're Midas Chasidus, they're things like some of the Gemara's other examples are the Gemara says Poel Tzedek or Abba Chilkia, Dov Remes Bilvavok and Rav Safra. These were special anhagos that the Gemara brings elsewhere of Amoraim who were extremely meticulous in certain areas, but not necessarily things which you're mechuyav mikra din. So on the one hand, we have the Marit, who says that the Gemara in Sanhedrin indicates that Yared L'Umnes is an Isser. On the other hand, we have Achranim, who bring the Gemara in Makkos and say it seems to be Midas Chasidus. And the consensus view seems to be that there are certain types of Yared L'Umnes which are actually forbidden, mikra din, you're called a Rasha if you do them. There are certain other aspects that are considered Midas Chasidus. And indeed, we'll see, when we get to the later poskim, 19th century and later, many poskim, especially among the Hungarian school, Chum Sofer's Talmidim, have taken a very hard line on Yared L'Umnes, even cases which, according to the strict halacha, is not strictly required. Nevertheless, if there's a Midas Chasidus, if you want to do the right thing, you really should avoid it. If you're dealing with another Jew's Parnassa, you really should go the extra mile and try, to the extent possible, to avoid doing things that will interfere with the Parnassa of other Jews. Just in terms of the Shulchan Aruch, Yared L'Umnes is kind of mixed together with Niske Shcheinim. Niske Shcheinim is roughly what we would consider zoning or nuisance laws, the rules that govern what a person can do in his property and what the neighbors have the right to object. Noise, smells, sights, windows, privacy, these kind of things are all Niske Shcheinim, something we may do at a future date, but that gets all mixed together both in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch. The legal principles at the bottom of this are really very different, but because both of them deal with neighbors objecting to each other, the halacha gets kind of all tangled together. I've been doing my best in the curriculum to kind of separate them out, but you'll doubtless bump into bump into one or the other. These halakhas in particular are very bound up. All of Chashan Mishpat is. These halakhas in particular are very bound up to law and custom, both zoning as well as what we're learning here on this. We will hopefully get a chance to see some perspectives of the poskim about what exactly and to what extent do we take into account the prevailing legal and economic norms, to what extent does that have any impact on the halakha. This really began to be discussed heavily in the 16th century among the Turkish Sfardim, who they were dealing within the Ottoman Empire, which had fairly modern in some ways commercial attitudes. The government was very encouraging of free trade, unlike some of the earlier regimes, where the kings and the governments wanted to control who could operate, wanted everything to be with their permission. Some of the Turkish sultans were very pro-business, and they encouraged commerce, they encouraged free competition, and many of the poskim, beginning at that time, do indeed start invoking the expectations of secular economic society, and discuss what the impact should be on halacha. Sveikus, one of the key questions is, in all of Chashan Mishpat, in all of halacha, and Chashan Mishpat in particular, one of the key questions is, how do we resolve safek? So when it comes to Archaim and Yardea, the standard rules are things like safek deraisa lachumra, safek derabban lakula. In Chashan Mishpat in general, the rule is, of course, mot mechmeral of haraya, muchzuk. In Baltalan, that was actually not generally the rule. In Baltalan, we saw that the poskim were often very, very machmer. They treated it as a deraisa, to be machmer. Again, Baltalan in many ways is not typical Chashan Mishpat. But in Asagas Gvul, we're going to kind of revert. We're going to see the various poskim. We're going to kind of revert to the more classic Chashan Mishpat rules of a Muslim Chayal Haraya, that the plaintiff, the one suing in Beis Din, is the one who has the burden of proof. And in these halachas, we're going to see. But basically, the rule is going to be that the plaintiff is the one who wishes to object to what someone else wants to do. So if I have a business and you want to object and say I'm encroaching on your business, you will be the plaintiff, and the burden of proof will be on you to establish that what I'm doing is asur al pi halacha, if it's a question of fact, if it's a question of halacha, if there are different shitas. In general, again, the classic rules would seem to be that the plaintiff should have the burden of proof, but as we'll see, especially as I mentioned among the Hungarian school, some of the poskim are very machmer on this, and they don't always follow this rule literally. Again, that's one of the things we're going to hope to explore as we go. So this week is basically going to be the Gemara. There's really one Gemara. It's about half, three quarters of a blot, and from there we'll move on to the poskim, the Shulchan Aruch, the early poskim, the later poskim, see how they apply the rules, and then eventually how these would apply to modern cases.